And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one I'm talking about, this one, I'd mean this one, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, we got a lot to talk about. Got to spend some time recognizing what's happening with Democrats as much as we do our own team, right? And listen, I don't fault a Democrat for being a Democrat. Now, some of them are disingenuous and they just go where the flow is. Like, there's literally people out there with a D by their name who just did it because that's what it took to get elected, and they're pandering to their base. Then there's others who are true believers like Bernie Sanders. All said and done, though, they are not our team, right? They're not my team. Some of y'all out there, I know that I know I have some Democrats listening to the show to see what's going on, but they are not my team. However, I am fully cognizant of the fact that I also have to pay attention to what they're doing. But let me tell you what's happening. So next week, the Democrats are hosting the Democrat National Convention in Chicago, City of the Big Shoulders, the Windy City. Chicago is hosting it. And there's a bit of a checkered history here. Chicago, 1968, was the year that the Democrat Party imploded on itself. And I don't mean like a little bit, y'all. It was talked about like it was the Titanic when it came to Democrat politics. It was the year that the Democrat Party pretty much, you know, just almost threw in the towel and did not know if they had a future in politics here in the United States. It was that bad. And it was because of the way they did things, and it was also because in Chicago, they were faced with some pretty contentious moments among themselves and among protesters. Well, right now, we're looking at the Democrat National Convention is going to be next week. And this is big doings. I mean, they're going to have all the bigwigs there. We got Hillary Clinton and Obama, and of course, Joe's coming in to give his farewell speech. And then, you know, they're going to be trotting out all kinds of other people who are there for the cause. And no telling what's going to happen. I mean, it might wind up looking a lot like the opening ceremonies at the, you know, the Olympics. Who knows? But all that to say, they are facing right now something they haven't truly faced in a while. They're facing the potential of up to tens of thousands of protesters who technically are from their base, coming to make a scene at the big party. It's like the crazy uncle came for Thanksgiving and brought the whole entourage with him. It's like Cousin Eddie showed up, you know, in the camper, and it's all been downhill ever since. They got some issues to work through, but 1968 is like, for those who were around back then, it still puts a shiver down their spine. So some people say that 1968 was when everything changed for the Democrats. It's still considered kind of like a curse on the Democrat Party. I've got a piece here from PBS. PBS? You went to PBS? Yes, I did. But PBS has this piece that they write about. The Chicago 68 story came out just a couple of days ago. And they point out that it was so bad that nobody went back. For years, Chicago had hosted more conventions, presidential nominated conventions, than anybody else in any other city in the nation up until that point. And yet, after 1968, nobody, Republican or Democrat, went back until like 1996. They finally, by the way, that was the Democrats. They went back, but they didn't go to downtown. They went to a convention facility way outside of the downtown area so they could avoid some of the scenes they had gone through in 1968. This one, they're going back to downtown. Now, political conventions can be hard to manage. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of people coming in. Sometimes there's a lot of passion involved, and then you get the protesters. But Chicago 68, oh, Lord. So it started with a fight on the inside. But they also had fights on the outside. The fights inside were ripping the party in pieces. Inside the convention, it got so bad, so contentious, nobody knew who was supposed to speak. The whole first night was spent fighting over who was allowed to be seated in certain areas and who was allowed to be seated representing certain states, because there were competing elements from various states who showed up, each claiming the right to be the delegates. The second night of the whole convention, it was totally consumed by, you know, struggles over what the party platform was going to be. Like, nobody had really worked through this thing. There were no working commissions, apparently, in advance that laid it all out and got approval to bring it before for a final vote. No, it was a fight. Then the whole rest of the week was like fighting over who was even going to speak. I mean, the speakers list wasn't finalized. Who was going to preside over the official sessions? Who was going to be the nominee was also a big, big deal. We don't see that nowadays. You come to the convention and the election process for the primary is already completed now for both parties. You can have a contested convention in certain instances. But for the most part, back then, on the floor of the DNC, there were moments when there was pushing and shoving and punches were thrown. Outside, there were thousands of anti-war protesters. Vietnam was in full swing, 1968. My dad was there for his first tour, as a matter of fact. Chicago police were out there with nightsticks and pepper spray wearing riot gear. Some called it the police riot because there were so many police. It became known literally, and some people referred it to as the Battle of Michigan Avenue. Mayor Richard Daley, who was pretty heavy-handed, kind of dictatorial, he had been fighting to get the convention to Chicago. He wanted it to be a showcase for a city, which I don't not understand. But he was like totally ticked with these throngs of anti-war protesters, threatening to spoil his big moment. So he ordered his police force to have to work 12-hour shifts, and he pushed to have thousands of fully armed National Guardsmen there to back him up. I mean, this was no small thing. This went on, and oh, by the way, this was the year that people thought that Hubert Humphrey was going to be the guy, but LBJ was still in the mix. No one knew what was going to happen. There was a total chaos when it came to who is going to be the leadership of the Democrat National Convention. You may recall that LBJ is the one who actually said, "I will not be running for re-election." LBJ is what Joe Biden is compared to more often now. Now, not in the way that, you know, Joe Biden doesn't have his faculties kind of thing, just in the fact that he was so incredibly unpopular, so incredibly divisive, that so much of the Democrat base was so anti-war and the fomenting of street violence was happening, that he was considered to be damaged goods. And so they're pushing for, the Democrat establishment was pushing for Hubert Humphrey. And yet polls were showing Humphrey was down by like 16 points against Richard Nixon. The whole thing was just a complete nut roll. LBJ pulled out. The polling gap began to shrink a little bit because LBJ then began to push for an actual peace accord in Vietnam. Didn't happen for a few years. But listen, the whole fallout from 68 in Chicago for the Democrats, it revised everything about how the Democrats elect their candidates. They moved to a position where they were more like the Republicans because they recognized we apparently had a little more order to our chaos. So we now have the system that you are used to seeing, where the Democrats have their primaries, and the Democrats, they still have some issues with what they call superdelegates. They can have like overwhelming power at a convention. But all these changes came about before 1972 because 1968 had been such a debacle. In the next 10 cycles after that, Democrats only won 4 times. In other words, they apparently almost emasculated themselves as an effective force on the national scene. Chicago, 1968. Well, here's the thing. Some folks are wondering if that's where we are again. You've got a completely, you know, establishment-ridden party that is making decisions that are outside what the voters have been looking for. You got their own base that is complaining. In fact, their own base is, once again, in an anti-war mode, except that it's not one we have U.S. troops in. Most of this is pro-Palestine. And then you've got others that are showing up, and then you've got counter-protesters that are going to be there. And then you've got those who are anti-Democrat, you know, right-wing, you know, conservatives are going to be there, but not near as much as what they expect to have happen on their own left-side base. Police are making a massive security effort. I'll tell you more about that in a few minutes. And all of this is happening at the same time as the party going through upheaval about who their candidate is. It is Kamala officially, but it has not been easy. most of the time you have months, even up to a year or more, of solid planning for how the lineup at a DNC convention is going to go. They have had weeks. It's a self-inflicted wound. I got no pity on them. But the reality is, Chicago next week could wind up being very interesting. Now, when we get back from this break, I'm going to tell you momentarily what's going on. What are we expecting? And then I'm looking forward to, at the top of the hour, going to bring in a Chicago buddy. He's an Alabama guy, actually. But Scott Stantis has spent years in Chicago working for the Chicago Tribune. He's now a nationally syndicated political cartoonist, which has to be one of the coolest jobs that I've ever heard of. But Stantis, he knows Chicago like the back of his hand. And outside of being in Alabama again now, because he's a homeboy, he loved his time in the Windy City. And we're going to get his thoughts on where this is going, what life looks like right now, and do we expect to see next week, physically speaking, be a debacle? And how do we expect it to be, you know, in terms of the party itself? I don't know. They got issues. Tim Walz, he's starting to become a boat anchor. And I don't know if they're going to get past some of the stuff we're seeing about him. In the meantime, Big Red, go ahead and move us to the break, brother. We'll take that break right now. We'll come right back. I'll get a few text messages and move us to the top of the hour. I'm just telling you, man, this is going to be interesting. Stay tuned, because you might need popcorn for this one. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, man, pulling all the pins on truth grenades as we sit here. So I'm in number one of the Triple Dipper, Chicago style. So next week, the Democrats open up their Democratic National Convention. I will also point out, by the way, that the people who want to run this country, the people who are asking you to let them be in charge of everything, they did not plan very well for their own convention. They did not even schedule it on the calendar at a time when it was assured that they would be able to meet the state laws for the 50 various states where people vote, and the territories where people vote, and get on the ballots in time. Because what happens is you certify your candidate, all right? At the nominee, the presumptive nominee arrives at the convention, right? Like Trump did. And then they have a vote on the floor. People cast their ballots for the nominee. It's somewhat of a, I don't want to call it just a, you know, just a rubber stamp, but it's expected. At that point, they've already earned it because they've been through the primary process, but the party still has to certify the candidate, and the candidate being certified then to the 50 states and territories. And several states, Alabama included, were like, hey, Democrats, you guys didn't do this very well, because like our state law says, you have to have it certified well before your even convention even starts. So they had to do a Zoom call. That's what they did. They did a Zoom call for Kamala. Can you imagine? You're lined up to be the candidate for the biggest job in the world, CEO of the free world, and you get it by Zoom. What the heck, man? Anyway, they got it done. So now they're coming into the conference and there's no vote necessary because they've already done the vote. It's just weird. Like, the whole thing's not making much sense. But here's the other thing that's kind of strange. President Biden's going to speak on the first night. The first night. He's the president of the United States. The first night is usually the openers, try to make a statement, but then also throw some things in to get them out of the way. And that's what it feels like here. So, story here that I've got from Town Hall, I believe. President Biden plans to address the Democrat National Convention on its opening night, touting his partnership with Vice President Kamala Harris. Why does it matter? Well, it's a changing of the guard. Remember, he won the primary. We all know that, right? And then he got basically told to go to the House. Like, Joe, we got this. Just thanks for your time. So this is his, like, sending off party, in a sense. I imagine they'll honor him. What they're wanting him to do, it says here in this particular article that I've got, is they want him to come in and talk about his legislative accomplishments. They want him to talk about the infrastructure law, the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act. But he's the sitting president. They're sticking him on the first night and then telling him to get out of the way so they can do the rest of the week. That's what's happening. It says Hillary Clinton is slated to speak on Monday. Former President Obama takes the primetime speaking spot on Tuesday. And you've got Governor Tim Walz speaking as a VP on Wednesday, followed by Kamala making her acceptance speech on Thursday. Great. All right. Not a unreasonable lineup, except that I find it to be curious and also somewhat unprecedented that what we're looking at right now is the fact that Joe Biden is the president of the United States of America. And he's doing a quick speech on the first night. Now, maybe it's more than that. I don't want to say I hope it is, because truthfully, there's no love lost. But still, I look at this and go, this is the weirdest convention ever. She comes in. She already got a Zoom call vote. That's out of the way. We're back in the 1968 mode with tons of protesters from your own base outside. And then on the inside, you got Tim Walz, who's imploding, and people are starting to get really nervous. And then, oh, by the way, Joe's there. And everybody hopes that Joe's going to toe the line. I mean, we don't know what could happen. He might let something slip. He might come in there and go, yeah, that time that Nancy came over and saw me and threatened me. Oh, really? What'd she say? Here's another piece of interesting news before we get to the top of the hour. 1819 News reports that the Alabama Democrats, who are, by the way, are still in complete disarray. I'm not looking for Democrats to ever rise up again, right? The state of Alabama, I don't mind being red. I don't mind the Democrats, you know, having no mojo. But I will say this, Republicans, we rise to the level of our competition. I had coffee with a friend this morning. We were talking about that very thing. You rise to the level of your competition. And right now, they're so lacking in competition. There's no competition at all for the Democrats in Alabama. They don't have their act together. And so I think Republicans in Alabama are getting lazy. That being said, the Alabama Democratic Party and the Democrat and the National Democratic Committee are at odds once again. There's a history here. I mean, it's like ugly. Alabama's Democrats are the crazy uncle who shows up for Thanksgiving. That's what they are. Alabama Democratic Party chairman of the whole party, Alabama Democratic Party chairman Randy Kelly, told the DNC chair, Jamie Harrison, that we got a race case. That's what he said. In quotes, a race case involving U.S. Senator Doug Jones. What? Yeah. Alabama's Kelly said that Jones orchestrated what he calls a racist bit to pick the delegates for the DNC. According to the Alabama Democrat leader, the former white senator, that's in quotations, that's his quote, the former white senator drove the DNC to appoint fake delegates instead of choosing the ones that the state Democrat executive committee had chosen. Oh boy. Kelly said although the party did not go back to get to pick the delegates, they might still send their own people anyway. This is the kind of thing that happened in 68. Texas was a total mess, Democrats in 1968. They had two different groups showed up. It was a mess. So the Alabama Democrat Party missed their deadline for delegate selection, totally missed the deadline. So Doug Jones got the National Committee to appoint people that can be trusted to come and do it. And meanwhile, Kelly, who did not lead his party correctly and get something done, is saying, well, it's all racist now, and we might show up with two groups. What do you think about that? By the way, he also said this, you ready? That he believes white people operate off the idea that there's something wrong with black people and that black people would be better if they acted more like whites. He said that white folk media is racist. That's the head of the Democrat Party in Alabama. Good Lord. All right, listen, we're taking a break. Coming back here momentarily, my buddy Scott Stantis is going to be coming on in the show. Got him dialing in momentarily. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in a secret undisclosed location outside of the Right Side studios. But man, we still got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. I'm really not sure where hour number one went. It is like already gone. But yeah, here we are on hump day, halfway to the weekend, hour number two. And I'm in this first dipper. I'm calling it Chicago style. I'm spending some time breaking down what we expect for next week. What's Chicago style DNC going to look like? We hope it doesn't look like 1968. Boy, that'd be a whooping. But you know what? It's on them to do it right. And yet the city of Chicago bears the brunt of them doing it right. Somebody who knows Chicago better than anybody I know is my good friend Scott Stantis. So Scott Stantis is a syndicated political cartoonist who is known throughout the nation for having the most cutting-edge political cartoons, but he is the guy for political cartooning for the Chicago Tribune. He's on the line right now. Hey, Scott Stantis, how you doing?
Hey, Phil, thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely, brother. Well, how you been, by the way? You good?
I'm great. I mean, still here, so woot, against all odds.
Well, and I'm glad of it, by the way. Hey, listen, I spent some time in the first half hour, not sure if you heard any of it, but unpacking what 1968 Chicago DNC was like and what a debacle it was and the protests in the streets and the riots and sure. The police and everything else. And it's still being talked about to this day. But then, you know, what we're looking at next week with the security cordons and the strain on the systems and the police presence. What are you hearing from the Tribune and folks in the city of Big Shoulders? What are they looking at right now?
Well, they're scared to death because really, I mean, we've talked about this before, but we've had an enormous attrition on the Chicago police force, especially after following COVID and then the Black Lives Matter, the defund movement, all of that. Just to throw out some numbers, 2 years ago, the Chicago Police Department accepted 849, I believe it was the number, either early retirements or resignations. They graduated that same year from the academy, 8. Now, I'm publicly educated, so my math may be not so great, but one of those numbers is bigger than the other by a lot.
I'd say. I mean? Dang.
And so that's one thing we're facing in Chicago. The other thing you're facing is you have Brandon Johnson. For those of you out there who don't know who Brandon Johnson is, he is the most fun mayor to draw in the world. He has a hairstyle that's pointy on the top, and he has this really bushy goatee on his chin. And he wears glasses. It's awesome. It's so easy to draw. As a cartoonist, this is important to me. But Phil, he's also done something what most of us would consider impossible. He's made a lot of us miss Lori Lightfoot. Oh, yes.
The voodoo queen herself? I mean, my gosh.
Oh, and she's awful. Now, let's also bear in mind, you tell me if I get too far into the weeds here. Cook County, where the city of Chicago is, has Kim Fox currently. She is not running for re-election, but she's the state's attorney, which is effectively the prosecutor, the attorney general for the county, right?
Right.
And she was part of the Soros clan that got elected to liberalize justice. Couple that with a justice system in Chicago, in Cook County, where I think in order to get appointed, you have to get your law degree from, you know, the back of the matchbook cover that says Draw the Pirate? That's the colleges they came from. So you have a stupid, ridiculously stupid judiciary, an incompetent, mega liberal prosecutor, and a mayor who has said, Phil, I'm not making this up. Has said, do you remember the violence that erupted last summer in Chicago? Yeah. And the mayor said, let's not demonize those who are doing the shooting. I'm like, oh my God.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up. You've got like the target-rich environment for drawing cartoons.
And so let's put all those pieces together. Let's put that connective tissue together. And now you're going to have the Democratic National Convention. And just to give you a sense of where it's being held, originally I thought it was going to be held at the McCormick Center, which is the convention center downtown. In fact, they're having it at the United Center where the Chicago Bulls and the Chicago Blackhawks play. And it's on the south side. So it's a ways out to get there. If you're going to protest there, it's going to take some effort. Now, I don't want to disparage our younger people, but they don't vote, let alone, I mean, protest or have any kind of attention span whatsoever. So let's assume for a moment that that's not true. And the protesters show up in the numbers they showed up with in 1968. Chicago does not have the manpower in the police department. And, you know, you may have to do what Milwaukee did. If you recall, they had to ask surrounding areas from far and wide to come and help police this event. That may happen. Now, downtown Chicago, they're having, as you just mentioned, they're having the corridors and they're trying to cordon in the protesters. You and I both know that works for, you know, if you're protesting, for something that you're not trying to be violent about. If you're going to be violent, you're not going to stay within those parameters. And if you're going to be violent, you better have overwhelming force to face it and to corral it and to keep it from exploding into the city. I don't know how they can do it, quite frankly. I do not believe they're ready. And Phil, I'm sorry, I'm babbling here, but one last thought. Yeah. Just this morning, the city is saying, well, we're still going over our plans. What? You've known this
it's
thing
next
was
week.
Coming. You knew this thing was coming for like 2 years. And you're just now thinking, oh, dang, is that next week?
Wow. You know, and by the way, I totally get the fact that there's a lot of moving parts and that there's you know, going to be big crowds. Even if you had no protesters, there would still be a lot of issues to resolve and things to do. But this just feels so disjointed. And then you combine that with the fact that what's going to happen on the inside of the building is this weird dynamic of they're going to have Joe, the sitting president, who's just been kicked out after being voted in, is going to be giving the speech on the opening night instead of the closing night. And then Kamala got her vote by Zoom call last week. And then she's brought in Tim Walz, who's imploding as we speak. And then on top of all that, they're going to try and pretend everything's hunky-dory. It's just, this whole thing is weird.
Well, you mentioned 1968. Now let's look back at 1968 and think LBJ gets, he doesn't lose, but he gets, it's way close to Eugene McCarthy in the New Hampshire primary. Lyndon Johnson announces he's not going to, he's, you know, if nominated, I will not serve. If elected, I will not serve. If nominated, I will not run. And so then, so they have a primary system. Eugene McCarthy wins a lot of those votes. Robert Kennedy steps in and sadly gets assassinated then, goes to the convention, and they hand it to, say it with me, kids, the vice president, the uber-liberal vice president, Hubert Humphrey. You know, for a party that says that they're fighting for democracy, I mean, nothing says democracy like a coronation, am I right?
But that's where it's almost like it, what goes around comes around. We're there again. That's what it feels like. It feels like the recipe for 68. And I wouldn't wish this on the city of Chicago because it was devastating. But the recipe for 68 is the same cake is being baked this year.
Yeah, I think you're just, right. Although I just don't see these kids as having any kind of. Do you remember? I mean, let's look back at 2016, actually 2017, and they were going to have the Women's March every year. And that lasted a year.
With the funny hats.
With the stupid hats. So I'm just looking at the protesters today just don't seem to have the same oom-pah-pa as they said back when in the salad days of my youth. They just don't seem to have it. So I don't know that you're going to have that. But you could. I mean,
See where protest groups, like four separate protest groups, had filed suit against the city demanding the right to march wherever they wanted to, or at least to be closer to the venues. And the judge handed them a loss like yesterday and said, nope, you're going to stick into a spot that we can't even see you from here. And we'll see if that really works.
Right. And where the United Center is in the city of Chicago, it really is in the middle of kind of nowhere. You can take the L to it and you have to walk a mile and a half through, how can I put this, dicey neighborhoods. So, yeah, if these kids want to go into those neighborhoods and protest, great. It's the same. You know what? I have the same attitude towards that I have towards the one who are pro-Palestinians. I say, you know what? Let me take the women with their, you know, their unshaved legs and their belligerence. Let's drop them into a Hamas camp and see how long that lasts.
Because Queers for Palestine, that's going to go well. just saying. Yeah. Hey, listen, brother, tell you what, we got to take a break right now. That's the schedule of the show. But can you hang on through the break and just finish this up with us for a few minutes afterwards?
I would love to.
What are you going to say? No, I already asked you all in front of everybody, so we're going to go with it. All right, listen, we're with Scott Stantis. He is a longtime friend, but he's also just an amazing wealth of knowledge when it comes to Chicago. Why? Because he is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, syndicated across the nation as well. And Big Rig, take us to the break, man. We'll take that break right now. We'll come right back and finish this conversation about Chicago style. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. Going right back now with my friend Scott Stantis doing Dipper number one here, calling it Chicago style. And by the way, if you didn't hear earlier, I mentioned that he's a political cartoonist. No, I got that wrong. The official term is he's apparently an editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, syndicated in over 400 papers around the nation. Former president of the Association of American Editorial Cartoonists. And anyway, he's my friend, Scott Stantis. Wow. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So we're back on this stuff about Chicago. So let me ask you something.
Sure.
If there is a concern about protesters, and you mentioned go to the outside, go to the other communities around this, you know, we don't care, but what about this? We saw in Paris when suddenly the transit system was knocked out at one point. I mean, there's mm-hmm. things that can happen. And I know CTA, the Chicago Transit Authority, is really on their game right now, trying to make sure security is where it needs to be. But there could be other issues, could there not?
Oh, there's others. I mean, you mentioned CTA, like you said. I mean, listen, I was in Chicago over Christmas this year. And I mean, I love the CTA because, I mean, it gets you everywhere you need to go. However, there's someone asleep on every car, some guy, you know, and for the first time, I lived in Chicago for 10 years after, I mean, I was a cartoonist for the Birmingham News for 13 and then got the opportunity to work for the Chicago Tribune, which you kind of have to take. So I lived up there for 10 years. I had never had any trouble taking CTA. I never felt unsafe. I never any of that until this last trip, where the first time, Phil, me, my wife, and two friends were accosted on the platform downtown. First time ever. Wow. Happily, obviously, nothing serious happened, but it sure felt like it could have. Now, bear in mind too. I know I threw a lot out that last segment, but let me just pile on with two more pieces of information real quick.
Yeah.
Near the United Center, this. For a city that made itself I'm having a senior moment. What do they call that? Where they welcome the migrants?
Sanctuary city.
A sanctuary city. They have a migrant camp near the United Center, which they're currently trying to empty.
Yeah, the tents are all gone, brother. They've cleaned them out.
And so they're trying to get rid of the homeless camps that are around those areas as well. The homeless situation, especially downtown, which we call the Loop, is overwhelming. That's going to be a problem. So all of it, I mean, they're trying to brush all of this to the side. Now, you mentioned Paris and the unions who shut down the transport to get some concessions. Let's not discount that. We haven't heard it this today, but you know, you could over the weekend, they could come forward and say, listen, you want the trains to run? We want a 20% raise. That could happen. And the unions are that powerful. And the mayor is that, oh, golly, what's the word I'm looking for, Phil? Stupid. That's it. Is that what? Stupid?
That well, the mayor's said, job, okay. he used to be working for the teachers union. That was his job. So
he was
he's a union guy.
For, yeah. We could talk about this and could, really. But he has just conceded to a $1.1 billion, with a B, dollar increase in the school budget for the Chicago City Schools for next year. Which, wow. As you might imagine, are you sitting down, Phil? Because this will shock you. Much of that is going towards teachers' raises.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. Pays raises and compensation so they can remain subpar at all turns. Hey, yes. And by the way, I've got an article here from Chicago, CBS out of Chicago and local, and they say that they're basically signs up now saying no tent zone. We will call the police, and they won't do that when they're not having these dignitaries coming, but they're clearing the street. It's kind of like in San Francisco when all of a sudden the Chinese Premier Xi was coming, and next thing you know, the tent cities were gone. It's like, where'd they go? What just happened?
It's a miracle. And the Supreme Court ruling that, you know, you can't, you know, pitch a tent on government property. And then you had the governor of California, Newsom, you know, governor hair product, is all of a sudden clearing out all these homeless camps, you know. It's I feel for people in those positions. As a Christian, I truly do. My heart bleeds for them. But there has to be a better way than just letting them pitch a tent in the middle of a sidewalk. There just has to be.
I guess the solution is to make sure you have a Democrat National Convention once a month. And then next thing you know, you're straight to I'm just saying. I mean, I find the recipe to be rather intriguing. Either get a Chinese premier to come in, socialist, communist, or just have the DNCs, socialist, communist. And yeah, wow.
Oh, wait, well, listen, I see the connective tissue now. It's all coming together.
We got about a minute left, so let me just ask you this.
Sure.
Next week, are you planning on making any trips up to Tribune, or what do you imagine? Are the tourists going, you know what? Let the convention goers have it. We're not traveling there right now.
Yeah, I suspect that you're going to have, I mean, you still have millions of people visit Chicago every year. I suspect they're going to look at the calendar. They're going to say, oh, the Democrats are meeting there. Let's hold on for a week and not go, because that'll probably put a damper on, especially some more, the more touristy areas. But, you know, the DNC is going to bring in tens of thousands of people, and that'll be good targets for the criminals.
Well, let's hope for the best. I mean, I don't wish problems on anybody. I'm not a fan of the Democrat National Convention whatsoever. I know you're not either. But I look at this and think one day I would love to wake up and find out we got Chicago back. Because what a beautiful city, what an amazing batch of people. I mean, salt of the earth still lives there. It's just the politics suck. Anyway, one day soon, maybe we'll see a turning. But right now, we got to get through next week.
Amen, brother. Amen.
All right, Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist. We appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Amen. All right, listen, we're taking a break. We're coming right back. Emily Jones from Moms for Liberty is calling in. You're going to want to hear it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back.